Blackstone Audio presents Home Fire Inferno, Burn Baby Burn, A Troubleshooter's Short Story by Suzanne Brockman. This book is read by Patrick Lawler and Melanie Eubank.
Timeline. This troubleshooter's story takes place in January 2010, about 8 months after the end of Breaking the Rules. Chapter 1. Jen. Jenny Lynn Gilman's water broke. At first, she'd thought it was some kind of horrific pregnancy-induced incontinence. For a few short seconds, she'd actually been glad that she'd gotten out of her sister-in-law Eden's car and was standing at the side of the road. But she, and Eden too, were standing there because the car had broken down on a lightly traveled stretch of highway in the butt-ugly desert, north and east of San Diego, far, far from civilization.
"Oh, my God!"
Jen said, as she realized that the pain that had nearly doubled her over was a labor contraction, and that she hadn't just peed her giant maternity underpants. No, she was going to give birth. Right here. Right now. "You okay?" Danny's voice echoed bizarrely over her cell phone, as if her Navy SEAL husband had called her from Mars instead of the Philippines. It was twice as strange that the call from his international cell phone had gotten through, when just moments before neither she nor Eden could get either of their phones to work. Even now, Jen had maybe a half a bar at the most. And yet, Dan's voice, although distant with that odd echo, was clear.
"Yes,"
Jen told him, working hard to keep her voice even. Despite her attempt, she sounded raggedly out of breath, still reeling from the shock of that sharp pain.
"I'm fine. Cramp."
It wasn't a lie. Labor contractions were cramps, of sorts, and she was fine. Or rather, she was going to be fine. Dan, however, was going to be full-on steam out of his ears pissed when he got the news that she'd borne his baby daughter in a ditch at the side of Obsidian Springs Road. He would have been pissed that she'd even agreed to go on this little road trip through the mountains to the tiny desert resort town of Obsidian Springs, even if the trip had been completely uneventful and car trouble-free. This was their first pregnancy, and Dan was more stressed out about it than Jen. Not about the having a kid part. He was more than okay with that, happily helping to set up their nursery, and even bringing home a collection of adorable stuffed animals in varying shades of pink. No, it was Jen who was freaked about her lack of experience with infants and her imminent responsibility for the life of this completely helpless human being that she was about to drop onto the searing hot asphalt. Danny's issue was all about Jen's health. This baby they'd made was already ginormous. It was a full-on mystery to both of them exactly how their daughter was going to emerge from Jen's womb without medical intervention. If it were up to Danny, Jen would stay in their apartment, feet up, in their bed, 24/7, until their little girl was born. So, yeah, the fact that Jen had gone on this road trip with Eden was going to create some noise when Dan found out about it. But there was one thing of which she was certain. He wasn't going to find out about it from her. Not right now, anyway. Nope. Eden had opened the hood to glare at her car's engine, but when Jen had squeaked out that, "Oh my God," she'd glanced up. Now she looked from the expression on Jen's face to the liquid still splashing on the pavement between her swollen ankles and sensible sneakers, and her eyes widened.
"Oh my God!"
she echoed in a much higher octave at a much louder volume.
"Seriously?"
Yes, Jen agreed that this seemed like a bad joke, because there was no way this was supposed to be happening. She was only 8 months along. First babies were always late and never early, or so everyone had told her over and over. It was part of the rationale she'd used in order to convince Eden that it was okay that she ride along with her today. Meanwhile, Dan had heard his sister and was now asking, "Wait, is that Eden?"
"Dan?"
Jen managed to gasp. She started over, forcing her voice to sound less squeezed and stressed.
"I'm sorry, Danny. I'll call you back. I love you. Everything's fine."
She cut the connection as Eden came toward her. Incredulity mixed with the concern on her sister-in-law's face.
"I'm sorry, but everything's like the opposite of fine. Why would you tell Danny that? I mean, even without this magic."
She gestured to the puddle on the asphalt. "We need a tow truck at the very least." "His status, the SEAL team's status, is mission ready." That was all Jen had to say. Eden nodded, instantly sober. She got it. Her own husband, Izzy Zanella, was also a SEAL. He was one of Dan's teammates, which meant that Izzy was currently mission ready too. The last thing a Navy SEAL needed was to go into a combat situation distracted by problems from back home. It was a hard and fast rule when sending emails or during these rare phone calls. Everything was always fine. It had to be.
"Still, this might be an exception to the rule," Eden pointed out.
"Childbirth is completely natural," Jen countered.
"In 4 billion degree heat?"
Eden shot back, gesturing around them to a landscape that looked like the surface of the moon.
"With a bottle and a half of water between the two of us?"
Jen looked down the empty road in both directions. Nothing moved. Nothing real, that is. It was unnaturally hot for January, and heat mirages shimmered and danced.
"This is California. Someone'll drive by. We'll flag 'em down."
"No one passed us on this road when we were heading north," Eden dourly pointed out. "The only traffic was down on Route 78, which is at least 5 miles in that direction." Which meant that Obsidian Springs, with its single, still-open gas station, was 5 miles back in the other direction.
"Well, they say you're supposed to walk while in labor."
But not even Jen could manage to sound optimistic about a 5-mile hike in this heat.
"Yeah," Eden said, "to make the baby come faster. I don't think that's what we want here."
"Maybe this was just a freak thing," Jen said. "I know the fact that my water broke is not good, and I need to get to a hospital relatively soon, but there was only just that one contraction." As she said it, her body proved her to be a liar, another pain hitting her so hard that she had to sit down right there in the dusty road.
"Come on."
Eden looped Jen's arm around her neck and lifted the larger woman up.
"Let's start by getting you back into the car and out of the sun."
"Oh my God!"
Jen gasped again. She knew from experience that Eden was much stronger and tougher than she looked, with her skinny jeans, her clingy pink top, and her high-heeled sandals. Eden had, after all, just identified the body of Greg Fortune, her wicked stepfather, at the Obsidian Springs morgue. What the man had been doing in the ghost townish resort was unclear, but he'd had a massive heart attack while watching porn on pay-per-view at the Lantern Inn Motor Lodge. Eden hadn't flinched as the woman in the white lab coat had pulled back the sheet to reveal her stepfather's mottled face. She'd just quietly nodded and signed the paperwork. She'd even settled up his motel bill, which was more than Jen would have done had their roles been reversed.
"I love you dearly,"
Eden told her now as she checked both her and Jen's phones for a signal. "But I am not delivering your baby all alone in the back of my car in the middle of nowhere."
"How did Danny's call come through? I've tried calling Tracy. I've tried calling Jay. I've tried calling Ben, all of whom were in San Diego. I've tried the county sheriff in Obsidian Springs. I just tried 911, but I get nothing. Even my texts won't send. Maybe an overseas call uses a different cell tower or satellite? No. I love you dearly, too, Jen said, reaching out to grab Eden's arm, her fingers tightening as yet another contraction ripped through her. God, that last one hadn't even ended, and a new one was starting. It didn't seem fair. She tried to talk through it, and her words came out half-shout, half-snarl.
But you are not calling Dan. Or Izzy. They are mission ready.
Eden glanced back at Jen with those movie star gorgeous dark brown eyes that were so like Dan's, except for the fact that she was remarkably unperturbed by Jen's outburst. It was possible that with everything Eden had been through in her short life, she was incapable of being frightened by anything or anyone. She was, after all, married to Izzy Zanella. I'm not calling either of them, she informed Jen matter-of-factly as she finished dialing a number and brought her phone up to her ear. I'm trying the senior chief. Maybe he can call Jay Lopez, who can then call Obsidian Springs to get you an ambulance to the nearest hospital. Where was the nearest hospital? Jen wanted to ask, but as the contraction gripped her harder, all she could do was moan.
Don't let him tell Dan. I'm gonna be fine.
Chapter 2. Izzy.
I'm having your baby,
Navy SEAL Izzy Zanella sang in his best falsetto.
I'm a woman in love and I love what it's doing to me.
Dan and Cenk were both on their burner cell phones talking to their wives, both of whom were pregnant. Mark Jenkins gave Izzy a rueful eye roll before turning away. Danny just completely ignored him, instead frowning down at his phone as if he'd maybe lost his connection. And although Danny's wife Jen was farther along in her baby-making journey, it was Marky Mark's wife Lindsay who was the biggest cause for concern. She'd miscarried last year and was playing this current pregnancy super safe, at least while still in her first trimester. And yeah, the fact that words like trimester were front and center in Izzy's working vocabulary was proof that conversations with both Danny and Cenk had become rather narrowly focused of late. Izzy knew that Jen's biggest issue was backaches and swollen ankles, while Lindsay was still actively riding the morning sickness train. Like it or not, he and his other SEAL teammates were getting a crash course in Pregnant Wife 101. Most of it was not new to Iz, who'd been the youngest in his family. He'd grown up with a pack of much older brothers who'd regularly knocked up their girlfriends and or wives. Starting in his tweens, there was nearly always someone pregnant in the house, sifting through his fridge, searching for the pickles to top her mint chocolate chip ice cream. It was essential always to have salt-free soda crackers at hand, and the sympathetic words, I know you feel exhausted, nauseous, awful, homicidal, I'm so sorry, baby, how can I help? Were also good to keep near the tip of one's baby-making tongue. But both crackers and placating words, along with other gifts like takeout for dinner or voluntarily vacuuming the house or folding the laundry, were impossible to provide from the other side of the vast Pacific Ocean. Right now, Izzy and Danny and Cenk were sitting in the airport in Manila, moments from being given the go to participate in the takedown of a commercial cargo vessel that had been hijacked by pirates from a tiny neighboring island nation. Alleged pirates. Rumblings from the intel community had made Izzy rather certain that the nameless tiny island nation's current asshat dictator was only calling them pirates and claiming that the cargo ship had been hijacked so as to bring down the full wrath of the U.S. Navy onto their heads. Other rumblings implied that said pirates were, in fact, representatives from the opposition party, meeting illegally to discuss an impending election that would move the country toward democracy. Another quirky thing about this sitch was that the SEALs hadn't been briefed for this mission in some covert ready room at the nearby U.S. military base. In fact, they'd barely been briefed at all. Instead, Izzy's team of SEALs, led by the very stern and scary-looking Lieutenant Commander Jazz Jacquette, had trooped through Manila's commercial airport in full battle gear, sans only their weaponry, which, had they been wearing, would have been rattling loudly, sabers and HKs alike. The only thing missing from their ultra-dramatic public display of force had been a neon sign flashing red, white, and blue, reading U.S. Navy SEALs, while it pointed directly at them in all of their military tough guy glory. Izzy was pretty damn certain that his SEAL team wasn't going anywhere, that go command wasn't coming, at least not today. He and his SEAL brothers were, instead, an exclamation point on whatever diplomacy was happening. They were the unspoken or else in a message about democracy that was no doubt being delivered to dictator asshat. It wouldn't surprise him one bit if they marched through the airport a few more times before the stand-down order came through, sometime after midnight tonight. Hobo Mofo, who was sitting beside Izzy, was thinking the same thing. I missed Breeze Meet My Dad Day at school for this. The fact that a SEAL who'd been given the most awesome nickname of not just Mofo, but Hobo Mofo was the single dad of a girl in the fifth grade was pretty mind-bending. Izzy didn't know Fo all that well, but if he'd been playing a round of two truths and a lie with the other SEAL, and the three statements about the guy had been, 1, wrestles lions for fun, 2, born on the dark side of the moon, and 3, lives with his mom and his 10-year-old ballet-dancing daughter named Brianna, well, Izzy would have picked number 3 as the blatant, flat-out, had-to-be lie. Mof could be best described by someone saying, picture the scariest serial killer you can imagine, with a build like a no-neck monster with hams for hands, give him dead, soulless eyes, a buzz cut that makes his blonde hair look oddly colorless and even gray, and then make him twice as huge, large and terrifying. Bingo. The SEAL even had the requisite bodies buried in the back 40 Louisiana bayou drawl. It was kind of fun imagining him in a world's best daddy apron, cooking pancakes with mouse ears, and dancing with his kid to the soundtrack from The Little Mermaid, Under the Sea. Yeah, that worked for Izzy in a dangerously perfect way. But he swallowed his laughter, because Mof was clearly bumming at missing his daughter's whatever it was at school. Didn't I hear you tell Janky that Lopez was going to fill in for you? Izzy asked. Their teammate, Jay Lopez, had been left behind for this current op after fucking up his knee during a hey-ho training jump. He was still hobbling around on crutches, wearing one of those really stupid knee braces that made it so you couldn't bend your leg. But he'd hobble his way into little Brianna's class and flash his perfect smile and give his super special G-rated I am a Navy SEAL talk. Most of the little boys and some of the girls in the class would want to grow up to be him. The rest would want to marry him. Izzy tried to imagine Mof speaking publicly, even to a bunch of kids, and got a searing vision of sweat pouring off the big man as he attempted to explain the duties of an E-7 SEAL without mentioning the importance of delivering double pops to a terrorist's head to abso-fucking-lutely make sure they were not just dead, but motherfucking dead. Yeah. But whatever Mof was thinking, it wasn't, thank you, Jesus and Jay Lopez, for saving me from that travesty. In fact, at the mention of Lopez's name, Mof shook his head and laughed, the way a man might laugh when finding out that his house's sewage line had backed up into the bathtub.
Yeah, Mof said, shooting Izzy a decidedly dark look. Great. That was actually Jenkins's idea. Lopez. Fuck.
Lopez. Fuck.
The words didn't make all that much sense. On top of being charismatic and handsome, Lopez was, like Hobo Mofo, a hospital corpsman, the Navy's version of a medic. He was hands down the nicest guy Izzy had ever met, not just in the teams, but in the entire U.S. Navy. He was sincerely, honestly kind. His name, Jay, was even short for Jesus. He was great with kids. Women fainted when they met him and... oh, there it was. The reason for Hobo Mofo's heartfelt Lopez fuck. "So how's the school year going?" Izzy asked, trying to sound conversational. "For Brianna. Everything okay? She like her teacher? Mrs. or maybe Ms.?" Hobo was a SEAL, which meant that even as scary and gene-deficient as he looked, he was far from an idiot. He knew exactly what Izzy was fishing for, and he gave Izzy his famous dead-eye look. "Yeah," he drawled as he pushed his massive frame up and out of his seat. "She likes her teacher just fine." As Hobo Mofo walked away, Izzy reached for his phone. He could at least leave a message for Lopez. Back slowly away from the hot fifth-grade teacher. But before he could dial, Danny Gilman plopped his lanky frame into Foe's still-warm seat. "I need you to call Eden." His teammate, former best frenemy, and still relatively new brother-in-law through Izzy's marriage to Dan's little sister, announced, "Something weird is up with Jen." Chapter 3 Lopez. Jay Lopez was having a bad week. His injured knee had forced him to remain in San Diego while the rest of his SEAL team went wheels up. He worked hard to keep the word hate out of his vocabulary, but he had to admit that he vehemently disliked being left behind at times like these. And it didn't help his mood this morning when the doctor told him he'd need to keep this brace in place for a few more days, after which, we'll see. In the medical world, we'll see was code for, yep, you're going to need surgery, which was disheartening to say the least. So when Jay walked into the fifth grade classroom of the daughter of the SEAL known as Hobo Mofo and was greeted by a teacher who could have played an elf princess in Lord of the Rings, he was ready for his luck to change. "You must be Chief Lopez," she said, with a warm, wide grin that worked astonishingly well with her elfin features. Pointy chin, freckle-adorned nose, hazel eyes with long, dark lashes. She was alone in a brightly decorated room that was filled with desks. His first thought was that he was going to be in town for quite a while. A month and a half, maybe two. Surgery, recovery, physical therapy. It was the perfect time to begin a relationship. "I am," he told the pretty teacher with his warmest smile, balancing on his crutches so he could hold out his hand to shake. Although the uniform is probably a pretty large clue. Her eyes sparkled. "I'm Carol Redmond." Her hand was cool and slender with short trimmed nails, and just like that, with that otherwise unremarkable skin-to-skin connection, Jay fell completely in love. "Thank you so much for filling in for Hugh today. I can't tell you how much it means to Brianna to have you here to talk about her dad's work. What can I get you? Would you like to sit down? Hugh told me you blew out your knee. That sounds terrible." Jay winced. It did sound terrible when put in those words, especially since a blown-out knee generally required surgery. "No, I'm okay, thanks. It's easier to stay standing." His big question, however, had to do with all those hues. The puzzlement must have shown on his face, because she laughed again, even as she gently pulled her hand free. "Hugh told me he had a rather complicated Navy SEAL nickname." Her eyes actually danced. "But for some reason, he wouldn't tell me what it is." "Bert," Jay managed. "I'm sorry, but his name is Bert Bickles." "Wasn't it?" "I am in the right place, aren't I?" "You are. His full name is Hubert, she corrected him. He told me he prefers Hugh.
I didn't know that, Jay admitted. I mean, I haven't worked with him all that much, and even then we mostly call him...
He stopped himself. But now Carol's eyes were lit up in anticipation.
He really didn't tell you? Jay asked.
He's a little shy, the teacher said.
Shy? Moaf? Shy? Huh. And you couldn't get it out of Brianna?
Carol shook her head. I'm pretty sure she doesn't know. When I asked, she said she thought it had something to do with Motown?
Jay laughed. That's, correct.
The elf princess didn't buy it, but she looked around to make sure the coast was clear and lowered her voice before leaning in to ask, Mofo? Jay lifted both hands in surrender.
You've seen him. You really want me to risk his wrath?
Her smile was genuinely amused. He's a marshmallow.
Yeah, now I know I'm in the wrong classroom.
The very lovely Carol Redmond once again laughed, but then a bell rang. You ready for this? She asked. They're coming in from gym, so there'll be a lot of extra energy, combined with the fact that it's the very end of the day. If you want, I can give them a spelling test, or maybe a pop quiz on this morning's math lesson. That'll put them in a stupor. She was kidding.
I got this, Jay said.
I believe that you do. Her smile was warm and held promises of many wonderful candlelit dinners over the next few months. Jay felt his phone buzz as a text message came in, but he ignored it, preferring to smile back into Carol's eyes as the first wave of fifth graders came storming into the room. Chapter 4 Izzy. Something weird was up with Jen, or at least that was what Danny had just stated as an irrevocable truth. Dude believed it, too. While his body language was all slouchy and playing it cool as he sat beside Izzy in the hard plastic airport chairs, Dan couldn't disguise the fact that he was wearing his trying-not-to-freak face. Izzy sighed because, Jesus, Jen's ninth and please God final month of baby cooking was going to be one long, trying endurance test for all of them. Danny being Danny, Izzy's tiny little barely-there exhale pissed him off. Look, I was talking to her, Dan said, heavy on the affronted, and something was definitely up. She just suddenly had to go, and she hasn't called me back.
Maybe she had to pee, Izzy suggested, while across the waiting area, Senior Chief Walchinok turned to scan the group of seals as if he were counting heads.
His patience was much like that of a kindergarten teacher or a den mother, only he was far more world-weary and grim. He saw that Izzy was looking at him, and as their eyes met, Izzy realized the senior was holding his phone to his ear. Izzy was just about to leap to his feet and say, "You need something, senior?" But Walchinok's gaze shifted to Gilman, and then back. And then the man shook his head just a little, like a pitcher shaking off a signal from his catcher. Hmm. So instead, Izzy kept his convo with Danbo going. What were they talking about? Ah, yes. Urination.
Pregnant women frequently have to... She would have told me.
Dan cut him off, completely oblivious to Izzy's and the senior's little charades game.
I have to pee. Or she would have just taken her phone with her into the bathroom.
Maybe it was number two, Izzy said, as he watched the senior chief pull the phone from his ear and gave it his best death glare, after which he pointed at Mark Jenkins and made a come-here gesture. Jenk snapped to it. Women can definitely be all private and weird about doing number two while on the phone, and I'm pretty sure she's with Eden, Dan interrupted again. First Jen goes, "Oh my God," and then someone else, Eden, goes, "Oh my God," and suddenly Jen has to hang up.
Yeah, something was definitely up.
Across the room, Senior and Marky Mark Jenkins were in a deep discussion, and now Mark had his phone out too, right in front of the senior.
Even though they weren't supposed to bring personal cells on a mission, the SEALs nearly almost all did it anyway, carrying international phones with SIM cards, because they subscribed to the Navy SEAL adage, two is one and one is none. As Izzy watched, their XXL CO joined them, and then he got his phone out as well. But Danny hadn't noticed. He was in his own oblivious, miserable world. Oh my God is an appropriate exclamation, Izzy pointed out, for everything from an apocalyptic mega-earthquake to finding an awesome deal on a newborn-sized Star Trek uniform onesie, with Ben coming home from school with an A on his latest English paper somewhere in the middle there. Dan and Eden's younger brother Ben was still in high school. Izzy and Eden shared custody of the kid with Danny and Jen. It worked out nicely, with Ben bouncing between their two apartments and Eden, Jen, and Ben hanging together for extra home fires burning support when the SEALs were out in the world doing their sea, air, and land thing. And there has not been an earthquake, Izzy quickly continued, as he realized he'd put a bad idea into Dan's already too noisy head. At least not the big one. We would have heard about it by now. It'd be all over Twitter. Seriously, bro, what's the absolute worst that this weirdness could be? That Jen's gone into labor, right? Oh my God, I'm having this massively giant gill baby, right? No! Well, if that's the case, then good news. Someone's with her. It's definitely not Eden, though. I got an email, said she's driving out to the desert today, to some wannabe resort town called something appropriately silly like Idiot Springs, to check out some potential wedding reception site for Tracy and Deck. And frankly, I should be the one yowling about weirdness. Whatever's up with Jenny Lynn, at least she's not a bridesmaid for one of your exes. Long before Izzy had met Eden, he'd briefly collided with the somewhat ditzy but surprisingly tough-as-nails Tracy, who had finally found a forever home with former SEAL chief Larry Decker. They were planning a big wedding, and Tracy had asked Eden to be a bridesmaid. That is weird, Mark Jenkins agreed, sitting down on the other side of Danny. Somehow he'd made it across the room without Izzy noticing. But, yep, the senior and the CO were still leaning against the far wall, still working their phones, and the tadpole, Tony Vlachik, had just joined them, his phone out too. Curiouser and curiouser. Izzy turned his attention to Mark, who was purposely mimicking Dan's faux-whatever body language. He looked equally loose and relaxed, and barely legal with his golly-gee freckles, boyish face, compact frame, and lean build. One of these days, dude was gonna Ron Howard. He'd pull off his hat, be balding underneath, and suddenly look his age. But until that day, probably well into his 40s, Mark Jenkins would continue to get carded. Senior wants you, Zanella, Mark told Izzy, managing to keep his tenor sounding calm and matter-of-fact. But he opened his eyes just a millimeter wider, shooting Izzy a message-filled look while Dan's head was down. Ruh-roh! Izzy answered with a questioning narrowing of his own eyes, to which Mark responded with a tip of his not-quite-red head, complete with a pointed look at the senior as if to say, "All your questions will be answered, douchebag, if you simply stand up and cross the room." So Izzy stood up and crossed the room, leaving Marky Mark to distract Danny with some scintillating pregnancy-related topic. "Lindsay's having these crazy erratic swings regarding food," he heard Mark say, as if he really gave half a shat. "She gets these cravings, but in the time it takes me to cook dinner, the thing she was craving now completely grosses her out." "Take her out to eat," Izzy heard Dan recommend. "Or get to go and order two very different meals, then be ready to give her yours when the food comes. Switch plates again halfway through. Works like a charm." Meanwhile, the muscle was jumping in Senior Chief Walchinok's very square jaw. In true Senior Chief manner, he cut through the bullshit and got to the point. "I got a call from Eden," the senior said, and Izzy swallowed the surprised urge to say, "My Eden?" because, really, it wasn't as if they knew a dozen different Edens. His wife's name was relatively unique. Instead, as Izzy instantly did the math and realized that Danny was probably right and Eden was with Jen, the senior chief confirmed that.
She's with Jenny Lynn Gilman. Her car broke down. They're out of town somewhere in the desert. They're having some kind of weird heat wave and Jen's gone into labor.
Izzy turned inappropriate surprised laughter into a cough that didn't fool Walchinok.
Before your wife could tell me where they are, the senior grimly continued, the signal broke up. I haven't been able to resume contact with her. I'm hoping you can help.
Eden told me she was going out to Obsidian Springs, Izzy said, but with Tracy, not Jen. FYI, it's a Palm Springs wannabe not far from Borrego Springs, and even less successful. At his words, the rest of the telethon team sprang into action, including the senior. They all started barking orders into their phones. Izzy got out his own phone and speed-dialed Eden.
Come on, come on, come on, he said, as the thing first searched for a signal and then went straight to his wife's voicemail.
Chapter 5. Lopez. Every member of a SEAL team has a specific job, Jay told the roomful of wide-eyed 10- and 11-year-olds and one very attractive 20-something after he'd explained to them exactly how he'd gotten injured. He knew they wouldn't be able to focus until he got that story out of the way, and it had eaten into much of his time. He now had maybe 20 minutes left before school ended for the day. But that was great. He'd leave them wanting more, especially the 20-something. Every SEAL has a specific area of expertise, he continued, in addition to being able to handle explosives, fire weapons, swim, run, jump out of planes. These are skills that all SEALs have, right? But we each also have a few talents that are unique that we bring to the team, that make the team stronger. And when our COs, commanding officers, and our senior chiefs are deciding who to send on a mission, they take that into account. For example, I'm a hospital corpsman. Who knows what that means?
Carol Redmond was smiling. She clearly knew what it meant. It was, to be honest, Jay's deal closer. He knew exactly what he looked like, with his dark hair, brown eyes, handsome face, and trim physique. He knew he had the ability to catch a pretty woman's eye. His being a SEAL helped out in that department, too. But women liked men who saved lives, and it was the fact that he was a hospital corpsman that got him the non-hesitating yes when he asked a woman out to dinner. But that was a question for later. Right now, several hands shot up around the room, but Jay called on Hobo Mofo's daughter Brianna, who looked almost shockingly like her gigantic father, with the same thick blonde hair and wide blue eyes. With her redwood tree-like build, Bree already towered over her teacher. Although, unlike her dad's angry ogre effect, the girl's default expression was a charming, quicksilver smile that transformed her completely. She was pure, strapping milkmaid, with an easygoing manner that was sweet and friendly.
A hospital corpsman is like a paramedic, Brianna turned to speak to the entire class. You know, when you call an ambulance, paramedics are the ones who show up and perform first aid and save everyone's life.
That's right, Jay said. And why do you think Hobo... Bert... He cleared his throat.
Excuse me, Hubert, Brianna's dad, and I, why do you think we rarely serve together on the same team?
Because you're both hospital corpsmen, Brianna answered triumphantly.
That's right, Jay said, smiling back at the girl, aware that her teacher was watching and smiling too. Yes, he was very good with kids, thanks. And most 7 or 8 men SEAL teams need only one, because they also need a radio man, an explosives expert, a point man. He's the guy who goes first when you go into dark and scary places. That's an important job.
He ticked them off on his fingers,
A sniper, a commanding officer, can't forget him, he's in charge. The classroom door opened and an older woman poked her head in. As Jay kept talking, he watched Carol cross toward her. And depending on the mission, we might need a languages expert or a computer expert or a variety of other types of experts. Brianna raised her hand and Jay called on her again as, heads together, the two women spoke.
I can think of a op where the CO would want an entire SEAL team of hospital corpsmen, she said, if there was an earthquake and a hospital got destroyed.
For humanitarian efforts, yes, good one. From the corner of his eyes, Jay saw both Carol and the other woman turn and look directly at him. Something was definitely up. I'm guessing I shouldn't have set my phone on silent, he said as he balanced on his crutches to pull it out of his pocket. He flicked it on and... Holy crap! 20 missed calls and a whole slew of texts that said, Danny's wife Jen had gone into labor where? I'm sorry, he said, already hobbling his way toward the door. I have to run. But the look on little Brianna's face made him realize that he'd frightened her. She'd leapt to the conclusion that if a SEAL with an injured knee was being called in, something terrible had happened to the SEALs, like her father, who were already out in the world. Everything's fine, he told her, told the whole class, but a bunch of my friends are overseas on an op with Bree's dad, and another of my friends is going to have a baby, right now, and I need to go help her because her car broke down out in the desert about an hour outside of town. As the words left his lips, Jay realized that he didn't actually have any way to help Jen. Because of his knee, he wasn't driving his car. He'd gotten dropped off at the school by his teammate Tony V's fiancé, Adam, who was an actor. Adam was currently filming an indie movie down by the Dell on the beach in Coronado, and he wasn't going to be able to swing by to pick Jay up until after 4. At the earliest... Jay's plan had been to hang at the nearby library until Adam returned. Now Jay looked at Carol Redmond. I don't suppose you have a car that I can borrow, maybe? His teammate, Izzy Zanella, had a song for every occasion, and the irreverent SEAL's voice echoed in Jay's head, Hey, I just met you, and this is crazy. Carol laughed her surprise. Can you even drive? I mean, with the... She gestured to his brace. He nodded. I'll take it off.
Won't that hurt?
Yes, but at least he'd be able to help Jen. I'll be fine. I'm sorry to ask. I know you don't really know me, but...
No, it's okay.
Carol hurried to the big desk positioned at the front of the room, pulling an enormous, slouchy bag from the bottom drawer. She put it over her shoulder as she began sifting through it, hopefully searching for her car keys.
Brianna's dad, Hugh Bickles, called the office hoping to reach you, the older woman said. Apparently there's been a major accident north of Borrego Springs, and all emergency vehicles are tied up.
Dawn, this is Chief Jay Lopez. Jay, Dawn, Mrs. Breckenridge, is the school principal.
Carol threw out a quick introduction as she pulled out her keys, but she clearly was hesitating to just hand them over to Jay, instead looking at the other woman.
I don't have bus duty today, she started.
The principal nodded.
Go ahead. Drive the chief where he needs to go. The bell's going to ring in a few minutes. I've got your class until then.
Thank you, Mrs. B,
Carol said, and Jay echoed her. She led the way out of the room and broke into a run in the empty corridor.
Follow me out this door, she called, pointing ahead of her. I'll get the car. Pull it around.
Carol was kind, beautiful, and a quick thinker while under pressure. If Jay hadn't already fallen hard for her, he'd now be total toast.
Chapter 6 Eden. First-time mothers are always late. There's no way this baby's ready to make the scene. Certainly not today. That's what Jen had told Eden in order to let her ride shotgun on this mission of misery. Freakin' Greg. Eden's stepfather was still making life hard for her, even from beyond the grave. Late last night, when she'd gotten the call from her too pathetic mother telling her that Greg was dead, Eden's friend Tracy had immediately volunteered to go with. But that was before Tracy had a 3 a.m. visit from the food poisoning fairy and spent the wee hours of the morning sharing intimate secrets with her new porcelain BFF. And shortly after that was when Jen proclaimed that she, instead, would keep Eden company, because always, no way, certainly not today. Famous last words, Alex, for 300? Right about now, I'm regretting not letting Ben come with us, Eden said to Jen as she helped her into the back seat of the car. Her little brother had gone pale at the news of nasty Greg's passing, and yet he'd asked to come along. But only one of the Gilman siblings was needed for this unpleasant task, and since Danny was out of the country with SEAL Team 16, it had fallen on Eden's shoulders. Believe me, she'd told Ben when she and Jen had dropped him at the high school. If Danny were home, I'd skip this magic show, too. I was just thinking, thank God Ben's not here, Jen admitted, soggy and sweating and out of breath from that contraction. Truth be told, it was almost as hot inside of the car as it was out on the road. Eden opened up the other two doors, hoping for a cross breeze that didn't come. She now took inventory of everything in the car's glove compartment and trunk. The only useful items were an old beach blanket and a small bottle of hand sanitizer. And that was going with a very generous definition of the word useful. I mean, Ben would want to go get help, Jen continued breathlessly as Eden scanned the road, hoping for an approaching car, but coming up empty. And then we'd have to worry that he was alone on the side of the road, and that he'd bump into some motorcycle gang of white supremacist survivalist skinheads. Except, wait. He could stay with me while you went to get help. At Eden's look, she added, well, obviously, in any fight between you and survivalist skinheads, you'd win. It was nice to know that Jen had that much faith in her. But as another contraction started, and Jen grabbed hold of Eden's hand and attempted to breathe through it, Eden was hit with a massive wave of overwhelm that she quickly hid. She knew she could help Jen deliver this baby, even here in the back of the car. Her sister-in-law was healthy and strong, with nice wide womanly hips. This baby would probably pop out of her easily, piece of cake, Eden hoped. But Eden also knew that sometimes babies were born needing immediate medical aid, and she was full-on screaming terrified that this roadside delivery would turn into a horror show, with that baby gasping for air in her arms, God help her. Because there'd be nothing Eden could do to save it. Her. This baby was a girl. Jen and Dan had found that out months ago when they'd had their ultrasound. Eden let Jen hang on to one of her hands as she used her other to try dialing her phone again. She'd gotten through to the senior chief once. Surely she could do it again. But she couldn't connect, and she couldn't connect. So she focused on Jen and the fact that Senior Chief Walchinok was a very smart, if slightly scary, man. Still, if anyone had the brain power to track them here, it was Izzy. And Eden found herself wishing she'd broken the rule and dialed her husband instead.
Chapter 7. Lopez. Jay had the front passenger seat pushed all the way back and reclined so that he could sit in the front with his knee brace on. As Carol Redmond drove, he worked the GPS on his phone, not only trying to find the most direct road to Obsidian Springs, but attempting to figure out the route that Jen and Eden might have taken. Luckily, there just weren't that many ways to get there and back, so they weren't going to have to crisscross the county searching for the disabled car. Also, he knew where Eden and Dan's little brother Ben went to school. Odds were good the two women had headed east directly after dropping him that morning,
which meant they'd taken Route 78 for quite a few miles before heading north on Obsidian Springs Road. As they barreled east, as the last remnants of the San Diego suburbs fell behind them and the landscape became desolate and harsh, Carol put her little hybrid into warp drive. She was an excellent driver, confident and sure and clearly unafraid to push the speed limit. She glanced over at Jay, no doubt because she felt him looking at her, and smiled. "You ever deliver a baby before?" he asked her. She shook her head as she turned back to the road.
"No. You?"
"No," he admitted. "I've stood by, assisted, but..."
"Not a whole lot of opportunities for a Navy SEAL hospital corpsman to practice delivering a baby," she noted.
"Nope," he agreed. "So it's been a while." Carol glanced at him again.
"You scared?"
Jay laughed at her directness. "A little, yeah. This baby's about a month early, so yes, scared and worried and a little freaked out pretty much covers it."
Carol nodded. "So our plan should be to get her into the car immediately, get us all moving toward the nearest hospital." She paused. "Where is the nearest hospital? It'd be good to know that going in."
Jay was already using his phone's GPS to find that information, but it was rough going because they were already in some kind of cell phone hell zone. "Are you sure you're not secretly a SEAL chief?" he asked.
"Nope," she said. "But I've got kind of a major crush on one, so..."
Oh, be still his wildly pounding heart. "The feeling is quite mutual," he said.
"Really? Oh my God," Carol said.
But he didn't get to hear the rest of whatever she was going to tell him because his phone rang. Caller ID presented him with a number he didn't recognize, and he answered it, hoping whoever was on the other end would have more information as to Jen and Eden's whereabouts. Coordinates would be nice. "Lopez?" He punched the speaker so Carol could hear, too.
"Chief?"
The voice on the other end echoed oddly, but otherwise was clear.
"It's Jules Cassidy. Where are you?"
"Heading east on 78, Jay reported, leaning down to scan the sky out both the front and back windshield. "Where are you, sir? And please say in a helo soon to be over my head." Jules Cassidy was an upper-echelon FBI team leader who had quite a few friends in the spec war community. If anyone could get a helicopter on short notice, it was Cassidy.
"Sorry, I'm in D.C., Cassidy said. "But I have access to,
He cleared his throat.
"Well, let's just say certain communications satellites and leave it at that. I haven't quite reached Jen and Eden yet, but I'm working on it. There is a helo, a commercial one, headed your way, but we don't have a doctor or even a medic on board."
Jay checked his GPS and rattled off their current coordinates. "We are already in the middle of nowhere, still about 20 miles west of the turnoff to Obsidian Springs." He shifted in his seat as he scanned the area. "Plenty of room for a helo to land. The only wires are along the state road."
"I'll tell Adam," Cassidy came back. "What color's your car?"
"Blue Honda Civic," Jay reported. "We'll be the ones pulled over waving our arms." He realized what Cassidy had said. "Adam's in the helo?"
"Yep,"
Cassidy said.
"Someone, Tony probably, got through to him on set out in Coronado. They were filming some kind of aerial shot and Adam commandeered the helicopter. Hang on."
Cassidy was talking on more than one phone at once, and his voice was muffled as he spoke to someone else, probably Adam in the helo. "Adam's an actor," Jay lowered his voice to explain to Carol. "A movie star, really. He's engaged to be married to one of my teammates, Tony."
"Gay married?" she asked.
"Yeah, well, I guess. But we just call it, you know, married."
"Of course," Carol said quickly. "Right. I was just checking to see if maybe I misunderstood and there was a female SEAL named Tony in your team, because, frankly, that would be pretty great, too."
She pointed in the rearview mirror.
"Is that?"
Jay turned to look out the back. That little dot on the horizon was indeed the Hilo. It was a larger bird than he expected, and he could tell just from looking that it was capable of moving pretty fast. "Pull over," he said, but Carol had already signaled and was slowing. "I hate to just abandon you out here," he started, but she cut him off as she put the car into park. "Nope," she said as they both climbed out of the car. She opened the back to extract his crutches. "Don't worry about me. I'll be fine. Besides, I don't want to leave my car on the side of the road, and I don't want to take up any extra space on the helicopter. Also," she made a face, "I'm kind of a wimp when it comes to flying."
"Uh-oh," Jay said as he tucked his crutches under his arms. "That might be a relationship deal-breaker."
"About that," she said,
but the Hilo was already coming in for a landing. Not only did its huge blades make it impossible to talk, but they kicked up a crapload of dust and dirt. "I'm kidding," Jay told her as he gently pushed her back into the driver's seat. "Thank you again. I'll call you with an update."
His crutches made it impossible to bury his face in the crook of one elbow, so he simply squinted and tried not to breathe in the dust as he hobbled out to where the Hilo was gently touching down. Adam slid open the door and was crouched there inside. He took Jay's crutches and helped him up and into the cabin. Jay waved one last time to Carol right before the door slid closed and they were off. Adam was shouting something about how Jules, he was on a first-name basis with FBI team leader Cassidy, still hadn't gotten through to Eden or Jen, but that the Hilo pilot was going to follow the road all the way to Obsidian Springs if necessary.
"Is there a first-aid kit on board?" Jay shouted, and Adam pointed toward the back of the cabin.
The medical kit was far from military-grade, geared more toward sprains, breaks, burns, and lacerations. It did, however, include a blood pressure cuff, along with tubing and equipment necessary to set up an IV if one was needed. Other than that, if things went south with either Jen or the baby, Jay would have to improvise. But he could do this. He would do this. Dan was counting on him. He took a deep breath in and exhaled hard. It wasn't until then that Jay realized his epic fail. He'd forgotten to get Carol Redmond's phone number. But just as quickly he realized that wouldn't be a problem. He could always get her number from Hobo Mofo. She was, after all, the Mofo's daughter's fifth-grade teacher. The SEAL chief probably had her on his VIP contacts list. Jay gently pushed the teacher out of his mind as he went to the windows to help Adam and the pilot scan the shoulder of the road for Eden's car.
Chapter 8. Eden. A truck went by but didn't stop. Eden chased the damn thing, waving her arms and shouting, screaming after it at the top of her lungs. But whoever was driving was too busy or too frightened to stop. "Son of a bitch," she said, hands on her knees as she caught her breath. "Son of a bitch!" The heat was brain-melting, reflecting up off the road in an oven-worthy wave as she heard Jen call out for her. "Eden!" She ran back to the car. "I'm right here," she called. "Asshole didn't stop." "I think something's buzzing?" Jen exhaled hard, which meant she was feeling the start of another contraction. They were coming closer together now and lasting longer. Eden held out her hand for Jen to grab. "Buzzing?" She realized the moment she said the word that she'd set her phone to vibrate when they'd gone into the morgue, and she hadn't turned the ringer back on. "Damn it!" Keeping her grasp on Jen's hand, she reached into the front where she'd put her phone into the plastic cup holder. She touched the screen and... God, there were about 15 missed calls, all from the same number. She quickly hit return call and put the phone to her ear, but nothing happened. She tried again as Jen panted the word, shit, from between clenched teeth. Again, nothing. But then Jen said,
Uh-oh. And Eden looked down to see a tinge of red staining her sister-in-law's maternity skirt. Oh, God, that was blood. I think that's normal, Eden lied as another contraction gripped Jen, and she did what she promised Jen she wouldn't do. She dialed Danny's cell.
Chapter 9. Izzy. Izzy was heading over to where Mark Jenkins was still babysitting Dan when it happened. He wasn't close enough to hear, but he saw Danny shifting slightly in his seat in order to pull his phone out of his pocket. He saw Dan frown and read his lips as he said, "That's weird. It's Eden." Izzy started running as Dan answered and put the phone to his ear. "Hey, Eden, is everything okay?" Dan said, but then pulled the phone away to look at it as Izzy skidded to a stop in front of him. "Huh. Maybe she butt-dialed me."
Chapter 10. Eden. Eden was incredulous. Jen had batted the phone out of her hand. "It was working," she said. "I finally had a connection." But when she picked it up, it was back to zero bars. "Damn it!" "I'm fine," Jen snarled. "I'm fine." "Yeah, you're not." Eden told this woman who, after Izzy, was her very best friend in the entire blessed world. "I was lying about the blood, Jenny. It's not okay, and I no longer give a shit about mission ready. But I do." "I get that," Eden said. "But I need you to think, just for a moment, about the possibility that you're not okay. You're not fine. And I want you to think about Dan coming home and you not being there to meet him." Jen was shaking her head. "This," Eden continued, gesturing toward Jen, "is now officially a life and death emergency, and if, for whatever reason, we can randomly get through to Dan's overseas burner phone out in wherever the hell he is, then that's what we're going to do." It was then that Eden saw it. Movement. A car. Way in the distance, approaching along the shimmering heat of the road. Except it was moving faster than a car, and it wasn't on the road, it was above it. "Chopper," Eden said, but then realized she'd used the army nickname. "Oh my God, Jen, it's a helo." For some reason, the Navy called helicopters helos, and this helo that was approaching was definitely courtesy of members of the U.S. Navy. Thank you, Senior Chief Wolchinok. As Jen pushed herself up to look out the back window, Eden's phone rang. It was that same number, the one that had tried over and over to call her when her phone was stupidly set to silent. "Thank you so much," she said, uncaring as to who was on the other end. "The helo is here." "Hey, Eden, it's Jules. Cassidy. I guess Adam and Jay found you. About time you answered your phone, sweetie." "Jay Lopez is really on that helo?" Eden had to shout above the rapid-fire sound of the blades as it landed in the desert, sending clouds of dust into the air. She quickly closed the car doors on that side so that Jen wouldn't choke. "He is," Jules said, and Eden quickly relayed that to Jen, who nodded forcefully through another contraction, even as Eden put the beach blanket up and around Jen's head. "We've got both an OBGYN and a pediatric specialist standing by to assist him, in case that baby doesn't want to wait for you to get to the hospital." "Thank you, but I need both hands free," Eden said, and cut the connection, jamming the phone into her pocket. Jen was already pushing herself out of the car, but Eden held her back. "We're going to carry you to the helo," she told her friend. "Don't want to accidentally dump the baby out onto the desert."
"That would be my preference, too."
They both looked up to see Jay.
He was wearing his beige chief's working uniform and his usual air of cool, calm confidence and authority. Eden knew that Jay Lopez hadn't been thrilled when Izzy married her, and she still thought that he didn't like her very much. Whenever he showed up to a party or dinner out with the gang, her heart always sank, just a little, and she tried not to sit too close to him. But right now, she'd never been more glad to see anyone in her entire life. "Thank God you're here," she said. "Before we get Jen to the helo," Jay said, "let's see what's going on in the baby zone." "Oh, this isn't awkward at all," Jen laughed, her sense of humor still intact despite everything. "When we're telling this story to Danny, let's skip this part, okay? We can focus on the helo rescue and then just have the baby magically appear in my arms."
"You want me to look? Would that be less awkward?"
Eden realized that Adam Wyndham, partner to Navy SEAL Tony Vlachek, had gotten off the helo with Jay. He was, oddly enough, dressed only in a bathing suit and flip-flops. There was a woman behind him, the pilot, come to help carry Jen since Jay was on crutches. "She's only dilated a little bit," Eden told them all. "The only way the baby's falling out is if she has some massive contraction while she's walking to the helo. That's why I thought we should carry her. I'd like to get her to the hospital ASAP." Jay glanced up at Eden as he caught sight of the blood on Jenny's skirt, and she nodded.
"Let's do this," he said,
and Eden thrust both hers and Jen's handbags into Jay's arms before helping Jen up and out of the car. But before they could create a six-armed, three-person sling, a car pulled up, and then a truck, and another car. It was the cavalry, so to speak, friends, co-workers, and family of Izzy's SEAL teammates, all of whom had apparently leaped into action and raced to Eden and Jen's rescue when they'd received the senior chief's long-distance distress call. Kelly Paletti, a pediatrician, thank God, came racing out of the first car, followed more slowly by Lindsay, Navy SEAL Mark Jenkins's also pregnant wife, who'd been driving. Lindsay had to lean against the car for a moment. She didn't so much as have morning sickness as every moment of the day and night sickness, but despite that, Eden wasn't surprised that she'd volunteered to come.
"You okay?"
Kelly's husband, Tom, who was the former CO of SEAL Team 16 and the current head of the private security firm Troubleshooters, Inc., had been right behind them in that truck. He stopped to make sure Lindsay, who was one of his top operatives, wasn't going to faint. "I'm great," Lindsay lied. "It's Jen who needs help." But Tom stayed close until Eden's friend Tracy, looking pale from last night's run-in with food poisoning, emerged from the third vehicle along with Eden's brother Ben. Tracy was still moving slowly, so she hung back to make sure Lindsay really was okay while Tom and Ben both ran over to assist Kelly. But Kelly had already taken command.
"Hi, Jenny.
Hey, Eden," she said with her usual good cheer.
"Oh, good. Jay, I'm glad you're here.
Let's get you into the helo, Jen. Get you to the hospital as quickly as possible, okay?" Everyone rushed to help carry Jen, and it was easy with so much help.
"Ben, why don't you take my seat on the helo?" Adam offered.
"I'll stay with Eden's car and wait for the tow truck."
"Thank you so much," Eden told him and all of her friends, as both she and Ben climbed into the helo behind Jen and Kelly and Jay. The pilot got in, the others backed off, the doors slid shut, and just like that, they were in the air. Ben's eyes were wide, his teenage ennui on a temporary hold.
"Is Jenny gonna be okay?"
he whispered to Eden. She hugged her brother as they belted themselves in.
"Yes,
she answered, and for the first time in hours, she truly believed it. And the baby, too. They both absolutely will be okay.
Chapter 11. Izzy. Izzy was sitting next to Dan when the call came in. He was watching for it, hoping hard it would come soon and be good news. So he caught the sudden movement when Senior Chief Walchenok straightened up, then looked at his phone, and then brought it to his ear. The senior was not prone to dramatics. Dude was steadfast, particularly in the face of tragedy, at least when he was on duty. And he was one of those stoically manly men, some years older than Izzy, who considered himself on duty the moment he stepped away from his family and out of his house. His wife, a former Coast Guard pilot named Terry, had had more than her share of miscarriages as they'd attempted to start a family. She'd nearly died while giving birth, and they'd adopted their second and third kids. But if Senior was feeling any sort of flashback to the night he'd nearly lost his wife and eldest child, he didn't let it show. At least, not until after that phone call. As Izzy watched, Walchenok went limp with what could only be relief, just for a fraction of a nanosecond, before he clenched his fist and made the international gesture for yes, complete with three implied exclamation points. Both his relief and that yes happened so quickly that if Izzy had blinked, he wouldn't have seen it. "Petty Officer Gilman," Walchenok intoned as he strode across the waiting area toward Danny. Dan stood up, because you always stood when the senior came at you like that. Izzy and Jenks stood, too, on either side of him. It was clear Dan was clueless, because he shot both of them an, "Uh-oh, what did we do now?" look. But Senior held out his hand and said, "Congratulations, son." And Dan automatically took it and shook, still confused, until Walchenok added, "You're a father, Dan. Jenny Lynn and the baby are both healthy and doing fine." Dan laughed his surprise. "Wait, what?" Lieutenant Commander Jacquette, the team's CO, was right behind the senior chief, and he too shook Dan's hand, delivering his congrats in his basso profundo. Then the rest of the team surrounded them. "Jen had the baby," Dan realized, and he turned to hug Izzy and then Jenkins. Izzy took the opportunity to sit down. "Thank God, thank God, thank God." But Danny was not an idiot, and he soon realized, "You knew! She went into labor and everyone knew?" He aimed his accusation at the entire team, officer and enlisted alike. Although, again, because he was not an idiot, he waited until both the CO and the senior were well out of range. Dan turned and punched Izzy in the shoulder. "Ow! Why do I get punched?" Izzy asked. But Dan was already extracting the details from Jenk, who'd admitted without any punching that Jen had gone into labor while on an impromptu road trip with Eden because apparently Tracy got food poisoning? That didn't make sense, because the whole purpose of the trip was to check out some potential wedding reception site, so why go without the bride-to-be? Izzy felt his phone rattle in his pants, and he pulled it out to see that Eden had sent him several photos via email. The subject header was, "Stealth Penis." That was interesting. "Callista," Izzy heard Dan say as he opened the email and the photo slowly uploaded. "Callie, for short." "Yeah, no, we picked out that name as soon as we found out we were having a daughter." "Holy shit, you guys, I have a daughter!" Izzy looked at the first picture. It was a selfie of Eden smiling, her head next to Jen's. Jen was in a hospital bed looking exhausted but happy, with an equally exhausted tiny baby in her arms. The baby was wrapped in a white blanket with a little blue hat on its head and... wait a minute. Stealth Penis? Izzy scrolled to the next shot, which was of Dr. Kelly Pauletti holding a naked and yowling baby, a big smile on her face. And sure enough... "Whoa! Check out these pictures, Danny," Izzy said. "Eden sent them. Dude, congratulations.
Your daughter has a penis.
Danny grabbed Izzy's phone, and as he looked for himself, he started to laugh.
Holy shit, it's a boy! I have a son with a million pink toys. He's a baby, what does he care? Izzy said.
But Dan stopped on the photo of Jen in that bed with their baby in her arms, and the expression of gratefulness and love on his face was so private that Izzy turned away and found the senior chief heading toward him on yet another mission. At their eye contact, Senior motioned for Izzy to step away from the crowd.
Sup, S? Izzy asked, quickly adding, and that S stands for Senior, not Stan, because even though I know that's your name, I'd never call you Stan, Senior.
The senior spoke over him as he handed Izzy a piece of paper. It looked like a short list of airlines, flight numbers, departure times, and gates. The first was a nonstop to Los Angeles. The second went to San Diego with a stop in Tokyo. The third did the same.
I just received our stand-down order, Senior told Izzy quietly, but we won't get a military transport flight out of here until Thursday at the earliest.
He pointed to the list. All of these flights are filled, but these airlines are willing to book passengers on later flights if you can get anyone to volunteer to give up their seat for Dan.
Whoa, this first one's boarding in 10 minutes, Izzy realized. It was two gates down.
He'd made a note of the fact during one of their walks through the airport that most of the passengers there were American.
This could work. I thought maybe you could go over there and quietly see what you could do, the senior said.
Thank you, Senior Chief.
Senior caught Izzy's arm before he could go. See if you can't get yourself a seat, too, he said. Your wife and Jenny Lynn went up to the morgue in Obsidian Springs to ID the body of her, Eden's, stepfather.
Oh, God, Izzy said.
I know you've had trouble with him in the past, the senior continued, but that couldn't have been easy for her.
Izzy had to agree. Still, let me get Danny home first. Senior smacked him on the same shoulder that Dan had punched, but this time Izzy didn't say, ow. Especially when the senior said,
You're a good man, Zanella. Get it done.
Izzy went to the gate, and yes, he was right. The passengers here were mostly Americans. He went right to the counter at the front near the boarding door and climbed up to stand on top of it. May I have your attention, please? He said, using his outdoor voice. My fellow Americans, my name is Irving Zanella, and I'm a member of your military fighting force. I'm here with about a dozen of my Navy SEAL brothers-in-arms, and one of us, my dear friend Danny, just found that his son, his first child, was born about an hour ago in a hospital not that far from San Diego. So if anyone here is not in a screaming rush to get back to the States, this very generous airline will put you on a later flight and let Danny use your seat so he can go home and meet his beautiful, beautiful newborn son. A young woman in the back had stood up when Izzy said the word born, and she and what looked like two friends made their way toward him.
We're on vacation, she said. We'll give you our seats, but we're traveling together and there are three of us.
Izzy jumped down. Thank you so much. Three seats would be incredible. Wait here, I'm going to get my senior chief. He dashed back to where the team was hunkered down. The senior was shaking his head.
That was quiet? He asked rhetorically as he went to handle the details with both the volunteers and the airline.
Dan went with him, still holding Izzy's phone, no doubt eager to start showing off pictures of his shiny new baby. Izzy sat down next to Mark Jenkins.
Hey, I know you're in a hurry to get home too, but would you mind very much if I gave the third seat to Hobe?
Hobo Mofo?
Mark asked, as if there were more than one Hobe in the team.
Yeah, Izzy said. We accidentally introduced Lopez to his daughter's fifth-grade teacher. His daughter's single fifth-grade teacher that Foe was hoping to get to know a little better.
Aw, shit, Mark said. Yeah, give him the seat. And tell him I'm sorry. Damn it!
Thanks, bro, Izzy said, and went to gather up the foe, who was happy to go home early. And after they joined Dan at the gate, Izzy took his phone back and emailed his wife. I love you, he wrote in response to her stealth penis email. I'll see you soon. Keep those home fires burning.
Chapter 12. Lopez. Jay was at the hospital when Dan, Izzy, and Hobo Mofo, the seal whose real name was Hugh Bickles, arrived. They must have rented a car at LAX and driven directly here after their 14-hour flight. Dan came into Jen's hospital room like a man on fire, and Eden shooed Jay and Ben out into the hallway lobby area so the two of them, three Gilmans now, had privacy.
We have a son, Jay heard Jen tell Dan. Are you disappointed? I know you wanted a girl.
I only wanted a healthy baby, Dan said, and for you to be okay too.
God, Jenny, I love you so much.
The door closed on them as Izzy, meanwhile, didn't feel the need for any privacy to soul kiss his wife. You okay? He asked Eden, his hands around her face, their foreheads together. Eden's eyes welled with tears. It was the first time Jay had seen her come anywhere close to crying. She'd been Jenny Lynn Gilman's staunchest ally and greatest friend, holding her hand and breathing with her, essentially cheerleading the way throughout what had been an arduous and frightening delivery. But even now, Eden nodded yes. She was okay, and clearly very glad Izzy was safely home.
Daddy!
Jay turned to see Brianna Bickles fling herself into Hobo's, Hugh's, giant arms. The big seal lifted up his daughter as if she weighed next to nothing, as he grinned his ass off with a smile that was a lot like his daughter's. It transformed him from angry ogre to, wow, kinda ruggedly handsome, enormously jacked guy. Where had Brianna come from? Jay leaned forward in his chair to look down the hall, and sure enough, the door opened, and there she was. Carol Redmond. She'd come out to the hospital, apparently giving a ride to Hugh's mom and Bree. Jay waved to her, but she didn't see him. Her smile was aimed at... Hobo Mofo? Really? Really? Now Hobe was smiling at Carol, and damned if that didn't make him look freaking adorable. What was it that Carol had told him in the car? That she had a kind of a major crush on a Navy SEAL chief? Hubert Bickles, a.k.a. Hobo Mofo, was a Navy SEAL chief. Wow, that would have been really not okay. Jay's hitting on a woman that one of his SEAL brothers liked or, God, maybe even loved. What was there not to love about Carol Redmond? Jay felt a pang of regret, a brief little burst of sorrow for what was not to be. But it faded quickly as he watched Carol smile up at Hobe, Hugh, her pleasure at seeing him evident in her body language.
I really wanted to come talk to the class, Hugh was saying as Brianna danced off to join her grandmother. I'm sorry I had to send a substitute.
Oh, Chief Lopez was very good, Carol told him earnestly. The kids loved him. He was so sweet with Bree, and then he led me on quite the adventure.
She laughed. It was educational. As Jay watched, Hugh winced.
Well, great. That's great. He's, here, if you, you know, want to say hi.
He pointed over at Jay.
Oh, hi, Jay,
Carol said as she looked over at him with so much nothing in her eyes that he almost laughed aloud. She returned her attention to Hubert, even as she moved toward Jay. He didn't know how she did it, but she managed, without taking Hugh's hand, to pull him with her as she said,
Congratulations. I assume you had something to do with Jen's and the baby's good health.
He was about to stand, but she stopped him.
Oh, no, don't get up.
I got lucky, Jay admitted. We have another friend, Dr. Kelly Paletti. She managed to drive out to where Jen and Eden were stuck. She took over, so I just assisted, which was fine with me.
It was the most amazing thing, Carol told Hugh. After Jay got into the chopper, I decided to keep going. I thought I could help by staying with Eden's car or, I don't know. But when I got there, there were all these people who'd already come to the rescue. Tom and Adam and Lindsay and Tracy. They just dropped everything because Dan and you were overseas.
That's how it works, Hugh said. Kind of like Jay filling in for me in a pinch.
It's so impressive, Carol said. And you know, if I've seemed at all hesitant, it's because it scared me, the idea of a relationship with someone who's not only got a dangerous job, but who's also always kind of gone. But it was great to see how it works, starting with Jay's amazing generosity and ending with a random group of people all coming to Jen's rescue. Except they weren't random. They're family. They're more than family.
Jay could see that Hugh was struggling to understand, and he knew all the Big Seal had heard was, Jay's amazing.
It really was nice to see that, Carol said again.
I have an idea, Jay said, because it was so obvious that Hugh was stuck in some terrible parallel universe where he'd returned from the mission to find Jay and Carol already engaged to be married. And unlike that brief pang of regret that Jay had felt when he'd seen Carol smile at Hugh, Hugh's suffering was deep and intense. Someone had to put the man out of his misery.
Why don't we go out sometime, like on a double date?
He looked at Carol.
You and Hugh and me and...
He cleared his throat and lied.
Well, there's a woman I've been dying to ask out, and this'll give me a reason to.
Ask her. I'd like that, Carol said, looking up at Hugh.
Wow. Yeah, he said, light finally dawning. I'd like that too, very much. Thank you.
The smile he shot Jay was definitely adorable.
We could go tonight, Jay said, but then slapped his forehead.
Wait, no, I can't make it, not tonight.
But you could go, right?
I'm free, Carol told Hugh as Jay found his crutches and pulled himself up and slowly backed away.
Oh, Hugh said, making an I don't know face. First night back always belongs to Bree.
And it was beyond obvious from the look on Carol's face that those words made her love Hugh all the more.
We could all go out, she suggested. Bree and your mom and you and me.
Oh, Jesus, foe, Izzy Zanella said from where he was sitting, his arm around Eden. Will you just grab her and kiss her already?
Hugh laughed and did just that. And Carol kissed him back.
This concludes the reading of Home Fire Inferno, Burn, Baby, Burn, a Troubleshooter's short story by Suzanne Brockman.